What is going on, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 56 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we are back for another episode where we're actually going to do a little previewing for what I think a lot of people are considering the biggest game of the year up to this point for the Rangers. They've played 40 games, they've got 42 to go, so we're just about at the midway point of the season. I actually just finished writing and publishing my mid-season report, which I want to dive into a little bit at some point during the show, but the game is the Friday night clash in Carolina against the Hurricanes. Who would have thought it, but here we are at this point in the season, and the Rangers are sitting in first place in the Metro Division. The Hurricanes actually have the best points percentage in the division, and they're sitting 2 points behind the Rangers. And so what this amounts to is a battle for first place. Whichever team wins this game will be in first place. The Rangers could be tied with the Hurricanes if they were to lose, but it's getting really, really tight at the top of the Metro Division, not just with the Rangers and the Canes, but you also look at the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. It's actually interesting as a whole. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, but if you look at the Eastern Conference right now, there's not a lot of suspense going down the stretch as far as which eight teams are going to get into the playoffs. The eight that are sitting there in playoff position right now, the top four teams in the Metro and the top four teams in the Atlantic, I would be pretty shocked if any of those teams fell out of the race. They all have a pretty decent lead right now, and it looks like it's settled. Now, which of those teams is the best in the conference? You could debate that all week long. You could debate that for months ahead. There's really no clear-cut answer to that question. I think all eight in their own right probably feel like they have a legitimate shot. But it's pretty interesting that you look at the standings and you're like, wow, those eight teams are probably going to be the eight teams that gets in. But then on the other hand, you're like, I don't really know which is the favorite. Obviously, Tampa Bay, two-time defending champ, I think you have to give them a leg up going into any playoff series. But we've seen the Rangers beat them twice. We've seen other teams beat them. We've seen some really good teams, Carolina included. I think you guys are going to see on Friday night, Carolina, as we talk about with our guest this week, who I meant to mention earlier in the show, I'll mention it right now, Sarah Sivian, who covers the Hurricanes for The Athletic. Sarah came on the show to talk a little bit about why is Carolina flying under the radar so much and what makes them so good. This is a team that I think goaltending was a question for coming into the season, but the goaltending has been really strong. Frederik Andersen is right up there with Igor Shesterkin and a couple others at the top of the league in a variety of statistical categories right now. And as far as the skaters go, the forwards, the defensemen, Carolina is incredibly deep. They have players that can perform all different kinds of roles. They've got skill, they've got speed, they've got physicality. They really are a force to be reckoned with, and that's what makes this such a big game for the Rangers on Friday in Carolina. I'm very excited for it, if you couldn't tell. I will be hopping on a plane Friday morning to fly to Raleigh. I wrestle with this sometimes. You know, for longer trips, I'll tend to fly into the city the night before the game, but Carolina is such a short flight. Gives me an extra night to spend with the family. I hate getting up so early. I have an 8:30 a.m. flight from LaGuardia on Friday morning, which means I'm probably setting like a 6:15 a.m. alarm. That sucks, don't get me wrong, but it does give me an extra night with the family. So to me, it's kind of worth it. And I'll get there with plenty of time before the Rangers have their morning skate, which will be at 11:30 in Raleigh, Carolina, North Carolina. So we're going to talk to Sarah a little bit more about that game. I don't want to dive too deep into that right off the top here. But since we last spoke, let's run through what's happened with the Rangers. And it's been very much positive, as it has been a lot of weeks when we check in with you guys on the podcast. The Rangers have won three in a row. They had a shutout win in San Jose, which was Igor Shesterkin's first game back from COVID protocol. He showed no ill effects. I think he made 37 saves in that game. Looked awesome. I don't think anything this guy does anymore surprises you, which, as you'll hear about in a moment with my midseason report, he has definitely been, I think if you're listing off the positives, probably at the very top of that list. Chris Kreider gets another couple of goals in that game. He's up to 25 goals now this season. He's tied with Austin Matthews for third in the league, right behind Drysdale and Ovechkin for that top spot. Really incredible, incredible season that this guy is having. And the goals obviously stand out But you got to consider the all-around impact. You got to consider the fact that I think if you ask anybody in that locker room who they view as a leader, even though nobody's wearing the C, Kreider would certainly be one of the first guys mentioned from just about everybody. And then you look at his all-around impact. Obviously, one of the best net front presences in the league, if not the very best. But defensively, I think he's having one of his best seasons. He's being used on the penalty kill more than ever, and he's doing pretty well in that role. The Rangers' penalty kill right now is the third best in the league at over 85% success rate. So the penalty kill has been awesome with Kreider on it. He's playing physical. He's playing fast. He's doing all the things that you want a star forward to do. And in a lot of ways, I think he's been their most consistent forward. So Kreider keeps rolling, got a couple goals in that win over San Jose. Pretty convincing win for the Rangers in that one. They go to Philadelphia on Saturday, coming off that West Coast swing. They spent like 10, 11 days on the West Coast. I drove down to Philly to meet up with them and catch that game. And as we all know, anybody who watched that game would tell you, it was certainly not their most complete performance of the season. But what keeps happening with this team, the thing that you can't discount, you can think that it's fluky if it happens every now and then, but it keeps happening over and over again, is they, when they look like they're out of it, when they look like they don't have it, when they might be gassed coming off back-to-backs or coming off of a long trip, they just find ways to pull out these games. A lot of times it's goaltending. A lot of times it's special teams, but they also have had these games where guys that you don't expect to contribute come through and come up big. In the game in Philadelphia, it was Philip Hedel who, a matter of minutes after the Flyers took the lead in the third period, Hedel, who looks like he's in line for a little bit more of a permanent stay on the wing right now, ends up getting the tying goal. Obviously, the biggest moment of the season for him, I think you could say. And then Kreider comes through, as he has all season for the Rangers, and scores the winner a couple minutes later. So they escape Philadelphia with a 3-2 win on a night when they really didn't have it. And then they come back for that Wednesday night game at the Garden against the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is the start of this grueling stretch that they have out in front of them right now, where they're going to play 8 games in 14 days before the February All-Star break. Then they'll get about 2 weeks off between the All-Star break and then the fact that they don't have a whole lot of games to reschedule during that break. They're not going to play, I think, until the 15th. So I think they'll go from February 1st to February 15th without a game, which will obviously be nice for certain reporters who want to catch up on sleep. But in the meantime, they've got a lot of games to play before they get there, and a lot of those games are against high-quality teams. We talked about Carolina. Toronto, we know, is a very dangerous team. So this was looked at as somewhat of a test for the Rangers, because I did crunch these numbers on Wednesday morning before the game. This is a pretty incredible stat. Prior to that win against the Maple Leafs, if you broke each conference, if you split them each in half, so you got the top 8 teams based on points percentage and the bottom 8 teams based on points percentage. When playing the top 8 teams in either conference, the Rangers were 6-10-1. But when playing the bottom 8 teams in either conference, they were 19-0-3. That is stark. That is amazing. I mean, first off, it's amazing that they could go through 22 games against those bottom 8 teams in either conference and not outright lose a single one of them. That's pretty incredible. But then it also tells you, like, okay, obviously the Rangers are a quality team. Obviously they're a playoff caliber team. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that anymore at this point. But are they ready to really compete with those upper echelon teams? And Ryan Reeves, when we spoke to him a couple days ago, was pretty open about it. He said it's something that they've talked about. They know that to prove themselves, to make the statement that they have arrived and they are a true contender, they got to win more of those games against those top teams. And they did it against Toronto. The amazing thing about that win, when we talk about the resiliency of this team and all the different ways that they've been able to pull out victories when it looks like they don't have it on a given night, they fall into a 2-0 hole 3.5 minutes into the game. It's funny reading the Twitter reactions because everyone's like, oh, I'm going to sleep. I'm changing the channel. I'm not watching this anymore. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, you know, we've seen this happen before where they've ended up coming back and making a game out of it. And that's exactly what happened. Reeves scores his first goal as a Ranger to make it 2-1, but then they go back down 3-1 again, so they're in a 2-goal deficit again, And you're like, all right, maybe this is a night where the Rangers are just going to, you know, end up losing this one. And you start getting ready, as at least from my perspective, to write the story like, okay, you know, they lost a game against a quality opponent, and now they're looking ahead to Carolina, and they really could use a win here. But second period, the Rangers completely flip the script. Definitely their best period of the night. Reeves gets another goal. Then that second line with Hedl, Panarin, and Strome starts picking things up. They get a couple goals. And then next thing you know, it's 6-3, and the Rangers have a very impressive win on their hands when it looked like it was heading in the opposite direction. So big win for them against Toronto, which gives them some momentum and keeps this train rolling as they head into Carolina for another big game. But every time they do something like that, whether it's a comeback win or, in this case, as we touched on, needing to feel like they can beat some of these upper echelon teams, every time they do something like that, you get a little bit more convinced that, okay, maybe this team is ready to make some noise, not just by getting to the playoffs, but actually competing in the playoffs. I'm still not going to go as far as to tell you guys that I think this is a Stanley Cup caliber team. I'm not quite there yet. I definitely want to see what happens at the trade deadline. But I'm growing a little bit more convinced of how good they are with each one of these games that they pull out. There's still issues. I mentioned to you guys that I had a midseason report go up on loha.com/sports/Rangers, also on the Bergen Record and a variety of other sites that dove into what I see as the three things that we've learned in this first half and the three questions that are lingering that I think will determine how good this team can ultimately be. For the three things that we've learned, I mentioned the goaltending, which Shesterkin, I think you could probably argue, is the team MVP so far this season. It's either him or Adam Fox, but you look at all these different statistical categories where he leads the league right now, whether it's save percentage or some of the analytical categories like goal saved above average, goal save above expectations, everything. He's at the top of the league in right now, and you've seen it with your own eyes how awesome this guy has been for the Rangers this season. The other thing that I wrote that I think the Rangers have proved is that they do have the star power in place to be a contending caliber team. When you look at Shesterkin, when you look at Adam Fox, who I think is right up there with Shesterkin as far as most valuable players, and is certainly in the Norris Trophy race once again. And then you look at the forwards. Kreider, we talked about how good of a year he's having. Panarin and Zibanejad are the most dynamic forwards in this lineup, no doubt about it. Those guys are the driving forces of offense. As many goals as Kreider racks up, you know that the most dangerous player on the ice when either line is out there is either Mika or Panarin. And then you got to give some credit to Ryan Strome as well, because the combination of him and Panarin on one line and Mika and Kreider on the other line gives the Rangers a very balanced-looking top six, and those are the driving forces of their offense. The final thing that I wrote, as far as what I believe are things that we've learned about the Rangers in this first half of the season, is that the combination of hiring head coach Gerard Gallant and adding the veteran leadership and the grit that Chris Drury made a priority of doing this offseason, whether you liked it or not at the time, and we all had our questions about whether that would actually improve the Rangers overall as a team, so far it's working. You can argue about how much you think those physical elements have helped them win games, but the proof is in the pudding as far as the overall impact, what these guys have meant to the locker room. Adam Fox said on Wednesday, he said, the guys who we brought in know how to handle the room and they know how to calm us down when we get flustered. So I think that is something that maybe it gets easily overlooked, but is important to the guys within the walls, is important to the guys in the locker room. And then buying into, and guys like Gaudreau and Reeves, even if they are flawed players in some senses, which they are, but they help with the buy-in as far as this hard, fast, physical, aggressive forechecking system that Gallant wants them to play. And I think that Gallant and his old-school approach, his hands-off approach that we've talked about before, letting the players police themselves, letting them make mistakes as long as they play hard for him, I think so far you've seen a collective buy-in, and I think that's a combination of the veteran leadership, guys like Kreider and Mika, but also guys like Gaudreau and Reeves who have come in here and made a positive impact on the younger players and the locker room and the culture, the winning culture that the Rangers are trying to develop. And Gallant deserves some credit for it as well. So those collective efforts that Drury made to create more clearly defined roles within the team and reshape this roster and balance out this roster, it's working so far. It's certainly, the Rangers, without a doubt, are a better team now than they were last season. As far as the lingering questions, number one, top of the list, I think, for a lot of people right now, is how will they solve the top six puzzle? And we talked about the combinations that you have with Kreider and Zibanejad on one line and Strom and Panarin on the other. But the right wing spots on both lines, we're still not sure what the answers are. The Rangers still have not found the right fit since trading Pavel Buchnevich. Now, Kaapo Kakko, even though the numbers aren't there, you do feel like, okay, this guy is for sure one of our top six right wingers, but the other spot is where the question really is. And they've tried a bunch of guys. They've tried Gaudreau. They've tried Semi Blais. They've tried Alexis Lafreniere, Philip Hedel, Dryden Hunt. They still have not settled on what that's going to be. And as you guys know, ultimately, I believe it could be a trade that ends up answering that question, although I do also believe that at some point you have to give Lafreniere a little bit more of a chance there. But I think that that for sure is one of the lingering questions for the Rangers looking ahead to the second half. The secondary scoring for this team, I looked this up earlier today. There's five guys, Fox, Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, and Strom, who each have 30 points or more. Collectively, those five have accounted for almost 60% of the total points the Rangers have produced this season. But there's a major drop-off after that. We've talked about these scoring issues at even strength. The Rangers are not generating enough offense overall at 5-on-5, and they are very reliant on those five guys to make it happen. And on the nights when those five guys aren't making it happen, they don't have much to fall back on. And ultimately, that falls on some of the younger guys who they're still waiting to come around as far as offensive production in Kakko, Lafreniere, and Hedel. If even one of those guys could take off in the second half, that would be huge for the Rangers. And then obviously the other thing is the trade. We're going to keep coming back to the trade because I do believe the Rangers will add. And then my final question, which again, you'll have to go to read all my thoughts and details about all this stuff on the story on the website. But my final question, which I think is what it all really boils down to, is are they a true contender? So that's for us to still determine. We're going to continue to talk about it on this podcast in the weeks ahead. But for sure, the Rangers are, I think, earning a little more trust from fans, and I think making everybody believe a little bit more with each passing game. But that's the main thing we're monitoring right now. You know, what are they going to do at the deadline? What are they going to do with the lineup? Those are all parts of the conversation, but what it all boils down to is how good can they be here and now? We feel pretty confident that they're going to have a window to contend for at least a few years. But does that begin now? Is now the first time you can legitimately consider them a team that can win multiple playoff series, maybe get hot and make a run? Or does that start next year? And I think they are being convinced slowly but surely that now is the time. And I think what we see them do at the trade deadline will reveal a lot about how much they actually want to go for it right now. So I think I've been talking for a while. I think we'll leave some of that stuff for the story. So again, hopefully you guys will go check that one out. For now, I want to talk about this game with the Hurricanes, and to help us do that, let's get to our interview with Sarah. And now let's turn our attention to what is turning out to be a first place matchup in the Metro Division on Friday in Carolina. Hard to believe. I don't know who saw that coming. I don't know if our next guest maybe did, but that's going to be Sarah Sivian, covers the Carolina Hurricanes for The Athletic. Many of you probably know her from Twitter. Love her, hate her. I think she's really fun on there. So I want to have her on the podcast and pick her brain a little bit. Sarah, how are you doing? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good. Really excited for this game tomorrow. And yeah, like you said, who would have thunk it? I guess Adam Fox, anything's possible, right?
Yeah, exactly. So tell me your vibes around the Hurricanes. I saw you wrote a story about this recently, and I heard you asking the coach about it as well, just about how the team is so good, and they've been good for a few years now. I feel like people that follow the league closely have kind of seen this coming, but yet they seem to be flying under the radar a little bit. They're not getting that much attention. So in your mind is the state of the team, and how good do you really feel the team is?
Yeah, I'm being kind of a whiny baby. Why is nobody talking about the Canes? But like, it is kind of ridiculous. There's just been consistently good. Maybe like nothing dramatic has happened, and maybe that's why, but I guess they are kind of flying under the radar. Obviously, you got the whole Carolina thing, but they're not flying under the radar of their opponents. And I guess that's what matters to them. The vibes are pretty good around here right now.
So what is it about this team that makes them so good? Like, what do you see as the glaring strengths for this team?
So fast, the forecheck and kind of just the belief that, and you see that on the, like the penalty kill is really, really good. And obviously that's kind of a thing where you write it off, but it's all the stars are on the penalty kill and they use it as like a challenge. And I think it's kind of a microism of, okay, they are pushing the envelope on this and they're doing that kind of throughout their game. So I think it really shows the effort they put in and the skill that they have. It's their younger stars are kind of reaching. They've been in the playoffs for like 3 or so years now and experience under their belt while still being young. So that kind of window and goaltending.
Yeah, the goaltending is actually a surprise because I was writing about Igor Shesterkin. I'm doing like a midseason report today and how good he's been. But the guy you see right up there next to him in a lot of these goalie categories is Frederik Andersen, which I don't think a lot of people saw coming. So I'm sure that's been a very pleasant surprise for them as well.
Yeah, it's funny because the Canes will kind of rotate goalies every few years and don't sign any of them to long contracts and people lose their minds. And then it's like they've built their team off really strong defense. So they just need an above. They don't want to take a risk on a goalie. They want an above average goalie that maybe isn't the best in the world. And they don't want to take the risk because he'll play fine behind the defense. So that's kind of their strategy there. So I was a little surprised, but at the same time, I kind of maybe expected it more than other people just hearing GM Don Waddell talk about the reasoning.
And when you look in front of him, you mentioned it, they have skill, they have speed, they have defense. It really seems like the balance as far as their skaters go is right up there with any team in the league.
Yeah. And the pressure's off for Freddie kind of in Carolina. I think that's kind of overrated. Like, is where you're playing really matter? But I do think Toronto is one of the examples of things that actually matter after the playoffs they've had for the past few years.
It's interesting from the Rangers' perspective because they've been playing so well. They have a really good record. They've obviously been pounding on the teams that they should beat, like the teams that are lower in the standings. They don't have a loss against any team that's currently in the bottom eight of either conference. So that's pretty wild to think about. They've definitely been taking care of business against them, but they played the Caps in the first game of the season. Haven't seen them since. They haven't seen the Hurricanes. And they haven't seen the Penguins. So those are the top four teams in the division. And it's getting like really tight. It looks like those four teams are probably, I don't want to say locked into playoff spots, but pretty good bets to make it in the playoffs. And now looking down the stretch, they're going to play each other a lot. So I guess we're really going to find out, you know, who is the best team in the division. Because right now it looks like there's a case for four different teams.
Yeah, this is going to be a really good measuring stick game to kind of see where they're at. It's been interesting to see the Metro race. It's like a first place race every single night.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing I think that stands out to me about the Hurricanes, and I'm curious your perspective from covering him, is Rod Brind'Amour seems like he'd be an awesome guy to deal with, you know, as far as just I think about it from a reporter standpoint. But the buy-in that he gets from his players and the way that he seems to relate to his players. I know when the Rangers were looking for a head coach, I used to hear from Rangers fans all the time about, you know, could they shake him loose from Carolina? Obviously, He seems like he's really woven into that community, which I guess maybe you could speak to a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing about him, I try to be careful when I talk about things he says, because I know him and I know his personality. Like, he'll say a lot and then people might twist it, but he doesn't love coaching. He loves the Carolina Hurricanes and kind of the guys he's built a group with here. And his family is here. His wife is the daughter of an NC State basketball great. And he's built his roots here and he doesn't want to leave. Like, and I know people were kind of trying to dunk on me when I reported from the start over the summer. Guys, I know the situation isn't great with the money he's being offered, and I think that's a slap in the face. He deserved more money, but he wasn't going to leave no matter what. And people are like, oh, you're just biased. I'm like, no, like, he will not leave this city. So there's that about him, but he's a great guy for sure.
And just as far as the it just like I see these videos of him in the locker room. He seems to be always just wearing his emotions on his sleeves. And it just seems like a guy the players really love to play for.
It's like every night he has a new speech and I don't know how he does it. I'm a writer. I don't know how he comes up with these things. Yeah. Like, he's a great motivator. And he'll always say, like, not that the X's and O's are overrated, but these guys are in the NHL. They know how to play hockey and they don't need some old guy barking at them. But he uses his time playing to relate to them and to talk to them. And he has kids kind of Svechkin and Nitch's his age. So he kind of can get through to them on a different level. I think I kind of call him the millennial whisperer sometimes, I guess Gen Z, because he's scary looking, Rod the Bot, all that too. And I think people think that means he's scary to be playing for, but he is a really relatable person and shows you respect if you respect him in the game.
Yeah. And it looks like a guy you can have some fun with during some press conferences as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We go back and forth and people are like, whoa, you're bold for saying, I'm like, no, he understands what I'm trying to do, I think. And he creates a good banter. I really appreciate him for that.
You think he follows you on Twitter?
No, he doesn't have a Twitter. He doesn't really know what that is, I don't think, but he subscribes to The Athletic, I think. He's definitely read a few of my articles, and I really appreciate that.
It's funny when that comes up, because with David Quinn, he would never admit or talk about anything that you wrote. But Gallant will bring up a lot of times, like, oh, I saw the lines you guys wrote. Like, I think those look pretty good. It's kind of funny because I think deep down, you know, they probably look occasionally, but it's kind of funny when you hear them admit it.
Yeah. And I just think that benefits both sides, because you're kind of more cognizant of, oh, like, let me make sure I'm getting the actual essence of what this guy's saying. Like, it's a two-way street of respect again.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the Twitter thing is a little bit different, because I know you like me, like to have some fun on there, maybe be snarky from time to time, like call people out on their stuff sometimes. So I wonder sometimes how they interpret that, but I guess it is what it is. It's just us trying to kind of engage with fans and have some fun.
Yeah. And I think after conversations with some of the players and the coaches too, like, they know I will put myself in a position that they can kind of make fun of and mess around with me too. So it goes both ways. Like, I'm not just kind of trying to crap on everybody. I can be crapped on too.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to
take a joke.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people call it the Carolina Rangers. I think the count is like six. Is there that many former Rangers? It's more than any other team. I know that for sure. So some of those guys, I guess we can rattle off names, but like, all those guys seem to be kind of important role players. I mean, we were talking about Tony DeAngelo and the impact that he's had on the power play after they lost Dougie Hamilton. So I guess that's a good place to start. In a lot of ways, it looks like a savvy move, because Hamilton goes to Jersey and signs that massive contract. And I'm sure it stung to lose him. He was their best defenseman. But they have so many good defensemen. And then they get DeAngelo way cheaper than they would have had to, you know, give a contract for Hamilton. And he's really been a plug and play guy for them, especially on that power play.
Yeah, gotta say, like, everything else aside, $1 million 1 year for what he's doing on the ice, that, like, you won't find a better deal. And then the Canes were already close to the cap, so now they have the option of maybe going out and spending at the trade deadline, like, to see where they're at in the playoff race. So that was a really savvy move by them. And Tom Dundon, the owner, is, like, really obsessed with depreciating values and all of the business ventures he does. So that was through the lens of that makes sense.
So from a hockey standpoint, it's worked out. And obviously things are different because it's Zoom now. It's not like we're walking in the locker room and stuff, but it seems like, given all the turbulence he has in New York, that he's fit in pretty well there, that the guys are, you know, enjoying having him around, and that he seems to, I guess, be on his best behavior.
Yeah, he's on his best behavior for sure. And I think that comes from a respect to Brind'Amour and Don Waddell and all of them for hearing him out and agreeing to sign him and take a chance on him. Like, this is his last straw. So it'd be really silly to mess up, fumble the bag, if you will, for a stupid tweet, you know?
Yeah. And Brind'Amour, I think, as we talked about earlier, seems like the perfect guy to handle that.
Yeah.
I was talking to Jacob Trouba earlier today. Him and Brady Shea are super close. And I know it was kind of a shock for him, especially when Shea got traded. I don't think many of us really saw that one coming. With all the defensemen they have, Shea has been pretty consistent in the lineup. It seems like he's become a key guy for them.
Yeah, he's a really, really interesting player. I think he has his moment. He is very athletic. Like, I don't know how to describe that. He can play for half a game. And it's like, he's not like Jacob Slavin, where he's the main guy, but he can definitely, he's such a good kind of second pairing guy, right? Like you can rely on him for a lot and occasionally a goal. Like he's been racking up the goals in 2022. He's a good complement to Brett Pesce. I think they play really well together and he's been really strong this season.
Has Brendan Smith, I know he's played some games. Has he been in the lineup Brendan Smith consistently or is that kind of on and off?
Recently, it's kind of like between him and Bear, and Bear has been kind of benched and Smith is getting a few games in. I think that's better for Smith when he's playing consistently. Like it's kind of rough with his skating when he comes back into the lineup after being out for a while, understandable kind of like at an older age, you know? So now that his legs are under him, I think he's had a few strong games, probably his best two games, the last two games.
He's a good veteran guy. There was a period where Rangers fans kind of got sour on him because he was in the lineup a lot and you know, had fallen off a little bit. But then last year when they needed him to step in at times, he did a pretty decent job. And he really seems to work well as that extra defenseman who doesn't need to play every game but won't hurt you too much when you put him in. And I know guys love him in the locker room.
Yeah, it's a good option to shake things up for sure. Like you don't necessarily want to rely on him to eat huge minutes, but I think when somebody comes out of the lineup, it's really good to have a guy like that.
Now, this is a guy, the next one I want to ask you about, that is a little sore subject for the Rangers fans because they wanted to keep him and Carolina got him so cheap and he's been pretty good for them, it looks like. And that's Jesper Fast, who, oh, yeah, when he was here, he was a second line player. Artemi Panarin and Ryan Strome, as good as they've been, they have not found a better fit for that line than Jesper Fast was. And it seems like he's gone down to Carolina and just, you know, he's like an all hustle, all heart kind of guy. And it seems like that's just continued.
Yeah. I mean, he kept winning that teammate award in New York, right? Yeah, and you can totally see why he'd do that. Like he is kind of a Rod Brind'Amour player. He's very good on the forecheck, backcheck, et cetera. He can chip in when needed. He has a really good, he's had some goals this season, I think. And he rarely makes a mistake and you need that in your lineup, especially on a Rod Brind'Amour team.
Yeah, it seemed like a perfect fit for him when he went there. Then who else am I forgetting? Derek Stepan, right? Is he playing frequently?
He's really, really good when he plays. He'll be like the fourth line center, but he usually comes into the lineup and chips in a goal and like all these, he's great analytically. It's kind of like, that's a find there.
Yeah, and when he was at the Rangers, he had that knack for scoring big goals, but that was more the prime of his career. Now he's kind of a veteran guy. Is that five? Is there anybody we're missing for more Rangers?
I think that's it. It's tough.
I probably should have looked at the roster before I had you on. I'm kind of I'm winging this a little bit, but yeah. So it's just crazy. Like, and I guess in theory there could be five former Rangers in the lineup on Friday night.
Yeah,
that's pretty wild. All right, Sarah. Well, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. I hopefully I'll get a chance to see you be at the game on Friday night.
I will be there. I'll see you there.
Yeah, so we'll definitely say hi there, and we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be interesting. I think the Canes are a better team. Rangers fans are going to like hearing that, but they're more established. We saw the big thing is the bubble. Like everybody keeps pointing back to the bubble. That was actually the last time these two teams played and the Canes just manhandled them in that series. I mean, that was like, no, that was kind of their coming out party in a lot of ways. No.
Yeah, totally. And now we'll see kind of how they match up now. It's kind of crazy that that's the last time they played against each other. But yeah, you'll get to see how I think the Rangers have improved in that time for sure. So we'll get to see by how much.
What I think is going to be interesting is when you talk about that hard and fast and aggressive forechecking system that Brind'Amour has. That's a lot what Gallant has tried to do with this team now. When they played a few years ago, the Rangers were more skill finesse, and I think they got pushed around a lot in that series. But now you're going to have Gallant trying to make them do a lot of the things that Brind'Amour has the Carolina Hurricanes do. And obviously the Hurricanes are more established with it, but it's going to be a little bit more of a strength on strength thing, which I'm very curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah. You really got to have it all these days. So
yeah, exactly. All right, Sarah. Well, I'll make sure, I'm sure a lot of people probably follow you already. I'll make sure to share your Twitter handle, make sure to read Sarah's stuff on The Athletic. And thank you again for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, folks, we're back. Big thanks to Sarah for taking the time to come on the show. As I mentioned during the interview, I think Sarah's a really fun follow on Twitter. I know she probably rubs some people the wrong way. I think it's kind of a love-hate thing is what I sense from seeing some of her interactions with people, but I think it's a lot of fun. I think she does a great job covering the team, and they're an exciting team. There's no doubt about it. So excited to see her tomorrow night, excited to see the game, which I think is going to be very telling for the Rangers because, as I mentioned during that interview, they haven't seen these teams that they're really push is going to come to shove with for them as far as a division title goes. They've only played the Caps once. They haven't played the Penguins at all, and they haven't played the Hurricanes at all. So we're going to see how they stack up beginning on Friday night. And thanks again to Sarah for helping us get set for that one. So with that, we're going to move on to your Twitter questions. And I'm going to be honest, I've had a lot of stuff to do today. I did not really look at these yet. So we're pulling this up right now. And one of the first ones I see is from Michael Silvers. This is actually a good one. You know, this is something I wanted to touch on the episode, so I'm glad you asked about it, Michael. The question is, since you've been on the beat, is there no other phenomenon quite like the fan base with the 12th and 13th forward and the 6th and 7th defenseman? Yeah, Michael, this is an interesting one because in some ways I find it fascinating how the fan base fixates on the last guy to make it into the lineup or whatever you want to call it. Basically, the guys that are right on the bubble who are probably going to pay very limited minutes, aren't going to play a big role. You know, your fourth line, for the most part, those guys are going to play like 10 or so minutes a night. In the grand scheme of things, as far as determining the outcome of the game, those guys are inconsequential comparatively to the top line guys or the top pair guys or who your goalie is. Those sort of decisions are obviously much more meaningful and are going to have a much bigger impact on how the game goes. But I do think that there is a certain level, I certainly don't want to call it laziness, because I do think that these are legitimate conversations to have. And a lot of you guys saw, I wrote a column this week that was saying that I think that the Rangers should make a more of a priority out of getting Morgan Barron in the lineup in the second half. Doesn't necessarily have to be every game, but I think that if you look ahead to the future, and I know they're very focused on the here and now, but I think if you look ahead to the future, prepping Barron for a potential role next season is important because we've talked about the salary cap concerns. The Rangers are going to need to fill out the bottom of their roster with guys who are cheap, preferably guys who are on entry-level contracts. Barron is one of those guys. And while it's very possible the Rangers could re-sign Kevin Rooney as their fourth line center next year, obviously they like him, valuable penalty killer, valuable guy for them in a lot of respects, his price tag might not go up. Maybe the Rangers can get him for another sub-$1 million per year contract. I don't know. Maybe another team will value him a little bit more and want to go a little bit higher. That is entirely possible as well. But Barron, I think, brings a lot of those same elements as far as size, physicality, defense, good face-off guy, has some experience on the penalty kill, and I think has a little bit more offensive upside, where I think grooming him to maybe take that role next year would be beneficial for the Rangers. So that's why I wrote that column the other day, and I think that Barron should and is probably in a lot of ways earned a little bit more of a longer look. But we've also seen with Gerard Gallant that this guy, as we've talked about before, is fiercely loyal to, whether you want to call him his guys or veterans or whatever, but the guys that have been with him for all season or the majority of the season, he really prefers to lean on those guys before he starts giving opportunities to guys that just got there. And I think that I can understand the fans' frustration about that, but I also can understand why and how that plays really well in the locker room. This is a guy who protects his players, who stands up for his players, and who is loyal to his players. And you can't discount, when I asked him on Wednesday night whether Barron and some of the AHL guys who came up, whether their play had opened his eyes enough to the point where maybe he would look at some of those bottom of their lineup spots as open competitions now. And he said no. He said, we're going to mostly go with the guys that have been here with us all year. We feel like we have a good team. We've been winning and we're going to stick with our guys. I know some people took exception to that, but I also think that if you pulled the locker room, that's an answer that a lot of those guys probably liked. And you can understand why Gallant, as a former player, puts an importance on standing up and saying those kind of things in those moments. So going with McKeag over Barron on Wednesday night, I think it was easy to criticize that move. It's not the move that I think should be the norm for the Rangers moving forward, but obviously it worked out. McKay definitely had his best game of the season against the Leafs. He almost single-handedly set up that Ryan Reeves goal. He kind of did single-handedly set up that Ryan Reeves goal in the first period when he won a wall battle and then ended up making a really nice pass to find Reeves in front of the net, kind of a no-look backhanded pass from the boards. So a little more skill than maybe you expect from McKay there, and I'm sure that's going to earn him another game. I'm fairly confident you're going to see him in the lineup on Friday against the Hurricanes. But ultimately, what I would say to the fans, and I think to get to your point here, Michael, is that these decisions, I think, are easy for us to fixate on because you're not going to argue about whether Artemi Panarin or Mika Zibanejad or Chris Kreider should be in the top six. You're not going to argue about Adam Fox or Jacob Trouba or Ryan Lindgren. The easier thing to pick out, if you want to have a gripe, if you want to have a conversation on social media, which, hey, social media is all about having conversations, so I'm all for it. But I think it's sort of easy to target the guys at the bottom of the roster and make a big deal and get all worked up over why is this guy playing when, you know, ultimately, again, look at the minutes, look at the roles. These guys are not usually going to dictate the outcome of the game. And a lot of times the difference between that sixth and seventh defenseman or that 12th and 13th forward, it's marginal. It's not like one guy is an all-star caliber player and the other guy belongs in the AHL. It's usually both guys who are borderline AHL, borderline NHL guys. So, you know, it's hard for me to get too worked up over it. And that's why I often find myself, I guess, in the position of where it probably looks like to you guys I'm defending the decision, when clearly I thought, you know, Barron should play. And I was surprised that actually McKay played over Dryden Hunt, although I'll get to Hunt in a minute because I think you're going to see him play a pretty big role in Carolina, at least from what I saw at practice today. But I would just stress that there's probably more of a reason behind some of these decisions than you think. I don't necessarily always agree with the decisions. You guys aren't obligated to always agree with the decisions, but I also don't think that, you know, the right winger or left winger on the fourth line, whether it's McKay or Barron or Gettinger or Brodzinski or whoever might be, Hunt, whoever might be in the mix, I don't think that that is a very consequential decision for the Rangers in the big picture. Although, as I touched on, I do think there are reasons that playing Barron more can help them in the big picture, can help them in the long run. So, yeah. Interesting point you bring up there, Mike. I've had some people tweet at me where they seem to get annoyed about these conversations. And I've had other people say, you know, this is something that we want to talk about. This is a topic that we're interested in. And listen, we're here for all topics involving the New York Rangers. So I take no issue with having the conversation. I just would not let it be something that keeps you up at night if you're willing to take my advice. So, all right, let's get to another question here. I see we have some other lineup stuff. I should note, you guys, I mentioned Hunt. I see some questions about Hedel on the wing and stuff like that. So I guess for this next part, let's talk a little bit about that. This right wing spot next to Panarin and Strom, it was Hedel for a few games, and they did have some decent offensive production, but also I thought they had some pretty bad moments as well. And if you look at the numbers, they gave up a lot of shots, a lot of scoring chances. Their expected goals rates are not great. So, and even Gallant, when I asked them about it after the game against the Maple Leafs on Wednesday, he was like, I was like, hey, what do you think about their night? And he was like, well, you know, some good, some bad. So I don't think that he's totally sold that Hedel is the answer in that right wing spot. And then show up to practice on Thursday, and what do we find? But Dryden Hunt, who was a healthy scratch, Gallant did say that he was good to, he had been activated from injured reserve and he would have been good to play had they needed him against Toronto. They opted not to play him. But when I got to practice on Thursday, Hunt was skating with Strome and Panarin. And we asked Gallant after the press conference if that was going to be the plan against Carolina. And he didn't fully wholeheartedly say yes. He's very rarely going to reveal these decisions for us the day before a game. Sometimes he doesn't even want to do it hours before the game. But you could see it with your own eyes. He's actually said this to us several different times. Like, hey, you guys can connect the dots. If you're watching practice, you can see what's going on. It looks certainly like Hunt is going to play in that spot.
And he didn't deny it for sure. He acknowledged it. It's something that he's thinking about. So I think you might see Hunt get in the lineup on the right wing. And then the next question from there is, what do they do on the third line? Because on Thursday, he had Gauthier, Gaudreau, Lafreniere, and Hedl all skating there. So he kind of had four guys, and one of those guys is going to have to come out. I wouldn't be shocked if it's Gauthier. I think you might see Lafreniere and Hedl on the wings with Gaudreau in the middle. I definitely think they want to keep Hedl on the wing for now. Maybe I'm wrong. Gallant said they were still going to talk about it on the plane and they weren't sure exactly what they were going to do, but that seems to be a decision that they're wrestling with right now. And a lot of it comes back to, what are they going to do in that top six spot? We talked about it a little bit in the first segment of the program. I'm a little perplexed by them putting Hunt back there. I thought he had his moments when he was in that spot, but I certainly don't think that he's going to be the long-term answer. We asked if Gallant thinks that that's the best matchup decision as far as playing against Carolina. He said no, it's not dictated by opponent. It's just what he wants to do. But I think the main thing that I and I'm sure a lot of you would like to see them get back to as far as the top six is concerned is giving Lafreniere more of an extended look on the right wing. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But right now, I think that's your best option. That's the best potential chance to fix this problem, at least until the trade deadline, which is when I think you're going to see them go out and try to get somebody who can solve that problem for good. But for right now, if you don't want to keep Hedl there, Lafreniere seems like the right choice to me, but it does look like, at least for the Carolina game, it's going to be Dryden Hunt. All right, we'll do one more here before we get going. I smell dinner cooking downstairs, so that is definitely a good thing. Josh Adam Z wants to know if I met Paulie D when he was doing intermission at the game on Wednesday. I did not, but I can tell you that our buddy Colin Stevenson, who is not even like an in-the-closet Jersey Shore fan, like this dude really enjoyed, I think him and his wife, that's like their guilty pleasure show. He was super excited. My man was fist pumping in the press box. It was pretty funny. I thought about taking a video, but I didn't want to put him on blast quite like that. So we'll let Colin live his life and enjoy his Jersey Shore stuff. I'm not the biggest fan of the show. I'm not going to say I've never watched it, but I'm certainly not something I know very well. Got messages here about Brennan Othman being named captain of the Flint Firebirds. That's interesting. We got someone here wants to know about a timeline for Sammy Blay. Definitely next season. I do not think he is planning to come back this season from that torn ACL. So I wouldn't consider that as a possibility. But I think the timeline is that he should be ready for training camp next year. So that's a good thing. Got another one here asking about Kaapo Kakko and is he even going to go over 10 goals this year? I don't know. I agree, and especially if you read my story with the midseason report, that the Rangers do need more secondary scoring, and they do need those younger guys, Kakko, Lafreniere, Hedl, to chip in. But I do think that as far as the overall game and where it's at right now, that Kakko is ahead of those other two guys. I think he has been the best of those three this season, but for sure, you got to see more scoring. This is something we're going to talk about over and over and over again until he finally does it, but I think the overall game, there are reasons to be encouraged, and I think that I would say that he's been the best of that young forward trio so far this season. A lot of repeat questions here, so I think with that, we're just going to call this an episode. Next week, guys, I'm not gonna tell you who yet, but we got a guest that I think you guys are going to be really excited about, someone who is going to help us talk about Henrik Lundqvist, who is having his jersey retired next week. So that will be a big topic of conversation on next week's episode. I'll give you more later on as we get into next week. For the remainder of this week, I hope you guys enjoy it. We're just about at the weekend now, so definitely enjoy the weekend. You got a couple Rangers games to look forward to, including that big one against the Hurricanes on Friday in Carolina. Probably going to get myself some barbecue while I'm down there, so I'm looking forward to that. I hope you guys enjoy your time, your weekend, and I will talk to you next week.